Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is called New Realities. And each week I talk to people who are really at the leading edge of consciousness, those that have kind of explored ways of looking at the world that create new ideas about what's possible. And tonight's guest is Peter Brown, and he has a very interesting way of looking at things. I heard one of his talks, and he really talks about being in that present moment, living for just what's happening now. Peter, are you there?
Yes, hello, Alan.
Hi, thanks for being a guest on New Realities. What I do like about what I heard you say is that when you're in the present moment, that really this is all there is. You can't think about the future or the past, and that's true, but how do people arrive there and let go of the mind that wants to keep them like thinking about other things than this moment? Do you know what I'm asking? Yeah. Sure. How do you arrive at the present?
Sure. Well, we are in the present, so it's not something we need to arrive at, obviously. But you're right. Most of us find ourselves having been indoctrinated through a lifetime of experience. In terms of thinking of things, having a consensus reality that there's an objective world and there's a past and there's a future and there's all sort of cause and effect, and we typically have a self-image where we're this tiny little, you know, primate existing in this vast, vast, vast universe that is basically dangerous and probably out to squish us. But the question is that really true? What is the fact? What is the evidence that that conclusion is based on? And if we look at the evidence of our experience, there is nothing other than experience. And if we look very closely at what experience consists of, we notice right away it consists of this omnipresent, very mysterious quality called consciousness. And
let me just hold on, because these people use that word consciousness, but no one has ever really defined it. And I don't know. Well, we just can't throw it out there like that. Right.
Well, I think it's important to know that we think we have defined it. I think most people think, well, there's consciousness and we all kind of know what it is because we're experiencing it all the time. But on the other hand, if we look very, very closely at what it is, the closer we look, the stranger it turns out to be. It has no size. It has no shape. It has no qualities that are findable. And yet it energizes this miraculous thing we call experience.
Wait, so what, you have a consciousness and I have an awareness. Let's use that word. And I guess you do too. And other people I've met do. Now, where does awareness become consciousness? This is, if we can just really be, you know, detailed in this understanding of this bigger picture.
Well, I don't think we can get that detailed, because again, I think we have these different words, and so there's a natural assumption that they're referring to different things. But I think if we look very closely at what our experience consists of, as I said, it gets stranger and stranger the closer we look at it. So what is consciousness? What is awareness? How is this being experienced? You know, how does my experience have the property of being able to focus in on something? I can look at a picture across the wall and notice it very intensely, or without shifting my eyes whatsoever, I can notice the entirety of the room. How does this happen? What is going on here? I think we're faced with a fundamental mystery, and I think that if we pretend we know what it is, we're fooling ourselves and we're opening the door to being stuck in confusion.
Well, I like that. So we rather be stuck in the mystery than the confusion. But I like the fact that we really don't know what it is. All we do know is that we're experiencing something.
Yeah, experience is happening. And what does it consist of? Again, there's this mysterious perceiving quality and there's this mysterious perceived quality. We don't really know what it is we're experiencing. I mean, We experience light in our field of vision, sound in our field of auditory perception, and thought in our field of mentality, and so on and so forth. But what we don't know what these things actually are. No one knows what they are. So, and yet we have all of these elaborate theories that supposedly explain it. We have physical theories about the physics of the universe. We have perceptual theories about the structure of our central nervous systems and all this, but none of this really says what it is. It just talks elaborately about how it works.
It's as if we can take apart like a computer, but and even put it together, but we don't know what the operator of that is in that sense, right? I mean, we need, would you say the operator of the hardware is consciousness itself? That's getting a little abstract, but does that make sense?
Sure, but that's the point, isn't that it isn't actually abstract. It's actually supremely concrete. It's mysterious, but your consciousness right at this moment is a sure thing for you, right?
And yet,
you can't possibly say what it is. You can't define it. You can't pin it down, you know?
But did you always have, you must have been educated pretty much like everyone else and grew up, you know, with a particular conditioning as in other ways. And then it seemed like there was an awakening to this reality that happened to you somewhere along the line. Can you describe like who you were and what emerged to reveal the mystery?
Sure. I grew up in the 50s. So I grew up in a pretty extremely bizarre cultural framework. And of course I was very gullible and sucked into all of the social messages that were around there. I was, you know, a pretty insecure guy and went through school like everyone else and had, you know, problems and successes and the whole thing. And I was trying to play the game as best I could and with a painful awareness that I was mostly faking it, which I suspect most people share, except those extremely fortunate people who seem to just step into society effortlessly and do everything right. I don't know that I actually know anyone like that, actually. and eventually I came to a point where I was questioning this. What is going on here? What is actually happening? And I became aware that people around me didn't really know. People were good or bad at playing the game of being a human being, but no one knew what that game actually was or what it was made of. Mm-hmm. And I've always had a temperamental bent to inquire into these things. And so I looked into science and metaphysics and religion and philosophy and pretty much anything I could get my hands on. Took drugs, did meditation. I mean, basically just floundering around trying all kinds of different approaches to this. And eventually I had the good fortune to find myself in a situation where I saw what I was. I saw that I was a disembodied consciousness and the world exists in my consciousness. And this is a self-evident fact. And in the years since then, I've been exploring that fact, trying to gain greater and greater clarity on it so that I can share it with other people who are interested in exploring the same thing.
Wait, but the only thing that sort of bothers me about what you just said, I mean, I like most of it, but the disembodied part, you said you were a disembodied consciousness. How do you know what an embodied consciousness or a disembodied would be like?
Well, what I mean is that the fundamental principle is consciousness itself, and all bodies, my body exists in consciousness, the world exists in consciousness, the solar system exists in consciousness. Where does the consciousness exist? Now, if you have a typical materialist worldview, you may say, well, my consciousness exists in my body. You know, it's a byproduct of the biochemical activity in my central nervous system and all of that. And I say, I don't see it. I don't see that that's the case because in actual fact, the body exists in consciousness. We know we have a body because of consciousness. So consciousness is the building block. Consciousness is the fundamental condition and all circumstances like bodies and objects and environments and other people and all that exist within consciousness.
Mm. So when you realize something, was it an intellectual thing, or it was a felt experience? I mean, this realization, how, because it seems like it's not just intellect that's real, or maybe it is, but it has to be other elements.
No, intellect is pretty useless in terms of having a realization like this. One has to see very directly I'd use the word viscerally, although that would be strangely inappropriate considering what I just said.
Right.
But yeah, you have to see very directly what is what. See one's own being. See the what's happening in the present moment. But it's actually fairly simple to do, because what's happening in the present moment is what's happening in the present moment. It's right now. It's not some mysterious thing that's far away or that's hidden. It's this thing, this event that is happening right here and right now. And yet we typically don't notice what it is in its nuance, because we have all these preconceptions about it. We have preconceptions about having a body, about living in a world, about all of the people around and all of that. Whereas every child knows that they're the center of the universe, right? When you were a kid, you knew that. You knew it was all about you. You knew that when you closed your eyes, the world went away. I mean, kids know these things. And yet they're indoctrinated out of them into belief in this postulated objective reality that in actually that can only be found subjectively.
Right. I mean, I know I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, be here now, be in the present. And I actually have been in the present myself a few times. But but how do you make plans? I mean, I know it's a ridiculous question, but how do you make plans for tomorrow? How do you do anything in the future if there only is the present?
Well, the present includes this amazing functionality. The present includes this spontaneous, astounding spontaneous intelligence, which is capable of having a conversation, of moving my body. I can find food. I can, you know, I have all of this functionality, and all this functionality is itself a mystery. Where does it come from? What is intelligence? What is capability? And this intelligence and all of this functionality and capability exists in the present moment. It arises in the present moment. It functions in the present moment, and is quite capable of taking care of things like planning for tomorrow.
Would you say like the present is, instead of we or you or me being in the present is in us. The present moves through us. Is that another way of saying it?
I would certainly agree with that. I think that, again, we have this notion of present, and we may think we know what it is, and we may think it's a simple thing. But I invite anyone to look closely at actually what is the present moment. I mean, we say the present moment, and obviously we all are intimately familiar with that, because this is where we all are. But how often do we look at what it really is? How long does it last? What's it made of? Where is it? You know,
it must last forever, because there only is the present moment, right?
Yeah, sure. And how does that make sense? I mean, you know.
Well, none of it makes sense, though. It just
exactly. It's fundamentally mysterious, and we can begin to notice how mysterious it is once we look at it nakedly outside of our preconceptions.
Yeah, but then what is time?
Well, again, sure, the great question. What is time? Time obviously happens in the present moment.
What? Say that part again. I'm sorry.
Time happens in the present moment. The past vanishes in the present moment, and the future appears in the present moment. And the present is could be said to be the boundary between those. And yet, none of those three things are anything other than this present moment. They can't be found outside of this present moment. So actually, the past exists now as a vanishing. The future exists now as an appearing. And the present actually can't be found, because all you can find is the disappearing of the past and the appearing of the future. And where's the present? So it's all, as I'm saying, it's all a very strange state of affairs.
Well, no, I like all this. I loved hearing this. But you live this way, I would gather. I mean, so how is your life, in a sense, different than other people who are living in these ideas of past and future? I mean, what is it like for you day to day?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that everyone actually lives this way, whether we recognize it or not.
Right.
Obviously, we all live in the present moment.
Right. Right.
When you realize that, you begin to trust the flow of events. You begin to trust your native functionality. And the capability that manifests in the present moment. And one discovers that events take care of themselves, that everything happens very spontaneously as it does, not always the way you want it, but how often does exactly what you want to happen happen, you know? I mean, we all know this. So, but it's just, it's taking the reality of the flow of events as a spontaneous event of the present moment as being true, as being actual, which itself evidently is. And all of these fantasies about the past are spin doctoring. I can't capture yesterday. I can't remember exactly what happened. Even if I told you a story about what I had for lunch, it wouldn't be the lunch itself. It wouldn't be the actual experience. It would be a fantasy I'm having now about the experience. And likewise, if I told you what my plans for tomorrow are, it's not the event. It's not the day tomorrow. What I do tomorrow cannot be captured by whatever fantasy or story I would spin now about what it's going to be. So these stories about our past and our future are fundamentally fantasies. And when we see that, we can stop relying on them, stop wasting so much emotional energy on thinking they're important.
So I get it. So actually, so you probably remember yesterday, but you don't, in a way, take it seriously. Is that it?
Yeah, certainly. I realize that my memory is a loose fantasy of what actually happened. It doesn't actually capture the events, but it doesn't need to capture the events because the reality already happened, and I have the present as a keepsake, so to speak.
The reality, wait, let me just absorb that. So yeah, so yesterday happened and we have a kind of made up fantasy about what it was because we can't actually recreate that in the detail it is in or was in, because then we'd be back in a present of yesterday, then it would be the present. So it's like, okay, it's past and we have a vague recollection of a story, and then we have this present, but there is a lingering of the past moments, and there's an inkling of the future. I mean, even in the present, there's this flow and rhythm of things occurring, you know?
Certainly there is. And seeing the truth of that fact shows us what time is, shows us what our experience of the past and the future actually is. It's the way in which the flow of events is occurring. But the important point is this flow is happening now. This flow is happening in the moment, and I can deal with it in the moment. I can't deal with the past. I can't go back and change the past, so why agonize over it? I can't go into the future and change the future, so why agonize over it? What can I deal with? I can deal with being in the present moment and functioning as I do in the present moment. And if I contain myself to that, I'm contented, I'm whole, I'm fulfilled, I'm wholly engaged with my life in a guilt-free and expectation-free manner.
So when you're working with people, have you seen some remarkable healings and breakthroughs? Can you talk about some of the things you've seen? I know it's the past, but can you talk about some of the things you've seen because you've been able to communicate this idea so effectively to people?
Certainly. People can discover the truth of their being. We can discover the truth of our situation. And I've seen this time and time again in people I've been working with.
What effect has it had? Yeah, on their bodies.
On their bodies, I don't know. I guess that's an individual matter. Generally, you know, if you're looking for symptoms, I would say it can give a kind of a stress reduction. It can give a feeling of emotional fulfillment and richness, because one stops thinking of oneself in terms of success and failure, and one discovers that one's experience in the present moment is actually complete fullness, and it always is. The present moment is always completely full. It's not lacking anything. And when we see that, when we notice that, we experience and participate in this fullness, and this fullness is the entirety of life. The entirety of your life is happening right now in this moment. And if you see that, then you can appreciate that fullness, the fullness of your being that lacks absolutely nothing.
I connect with, that's beautiful. It's empowering to just absorb that understanding.
Well, it is empowering. We disempower ourselves by letting ourselves be sucked into all sorts of beliefs, which are basically fantasies. You know, all these ideas about time and our history and about other people and all of this, which are basically just stories in our head. I mean, Byron Katie has gone into this at great length, and her work is targeted directly at this. And it is likewise empowering in terms of getting us to notice how much we've been duped by fantasy. You know, we're basically crazy people. We walk around, you know, worrying about things that are fantasies. It's as if I thought I was Napoleon and I was all upset about invading Russia. You know, I'm not Napoleon. It doesn't matter if I invade Russia, so why get upset about it? And yet this is how most of us live our lives.
The fantasy being what we thought we did yesterday or happened to us. Is that what you're saying?
All of that, you know, our history, our goals, you know, our self-image, who we think we are, what we think we're doing. If we look nakedly at the fact of our being in the present moment, we don't know who we are. We don't know what we're doing. We don't know what's happening. It's this amazing mystery that's doing itself, showing up as the symptoms of what we call our experience. And yet it is doing itself, and it's doing itself in a very powerfully effective way. So it doesn't need any help. There's nowhere for help to come from anyway, because it's doing all the doing.
Well, it's doing all the doing, but then we're also witnessing the doing. So it's a little more complex than that, right? Because there's a witness quality to the doing.
Sure. We experience the doing, and the doing is happening. Even dividing it into doing and witnessing is artificial, because there's always the doing and there's always the witnessing. So why bother to use those two concepts on it? You know, again, what we are here and now is one thing. There's one thing happening right here. And what it is a mystery, and you are that mystery. Your life is that mystery. Your world is that mystery. And this mystery is 100% complete, is doing itself, is full, so that's a very different picture than the typical worldview of most people walking around, I would say.
So how do you suggest how to live? I mean, how would most people live this way? I mean, what would we do? Or I guess the doing would do us, but.
Well, the doing is already doing us. But as a matter of fact, we would probably live much better. And that's been my observation of most people. That become more and more aware of this, because we get more access to our spontaneous intelligence. We get more access to our spontaneous functionality, because we're not being all bogged down with all of this, you know, the weight of all of our story and our history that we typically carry around with us.
So what do you suggest, like, for me to drop in the first thing I can do? I mean, of course we're in the present, but what should I do?
Well, that's it. Notice that. I mean, you say, of course, we're in the present, but just, you know, look at that. Look at that and see how absolutely true that is, how profoundly true that is. And see that, wow, this present, this condition that exists right here, right now, is astounding. It's very interesting. It has many very interesting properties that we don't typically notice. We usually I'll go into this in detail. We usually think of our environment as being very solid, for example. But in actual fact, every single circumstance in our experience is constantly changing. So everything is constantly slipping away. We can notice this because it's the self-evident fact. And newness is coming into being, and the newness itself has absolutely no persistence, vanishes. So right away, we discover that the world, the so-called stability of our experience is actually much more like that of a dream, where things are coming and going and nothing is really sticking around. So and we can notice this because it's the case. So we look at our experience right here, right now, and see that it is this astounding, slippery, changing thing. So that's a very interesting thing to notice. Then we can notice, well, what is experiencing this? What is this consciousness? You know, if I am what's experiencing all of this amazing phenomena, what am I? Am I my thoughts? Well, my thoughts come and go just like what I see comes and goes. So thoughts just behave like objects in the same way that sight behaves like an object. So maybe if I'm anything, I'm what's experiencing the whole thing. And then, well, that's right here, right now. So it's not actually, you know, far away that we need to accomplish some great feat to find. It's right here. So let's look right now what's experiencing your experience. And that gets very, very strange and trippy. We notice that, well, there's this kind of a sentient space or something that doesn't, you can't get a hold of at all. It doesn't seem to have any properties. And yet it manifestly has this amazing magical ability to perceive. So there's this sentient space perceiving this constantly changing mirage of energies that don't stick around for even an instant. And, we can look for ourselves in the moment, right now, and see if that's true. See what your experiences actually consist of.
Well, you say it's not solid, but it seems like things are pretty solid, at least the material world, the floor, the table, the computer. Those are all pretty solid things that seem consistent in the solidity from moment to moment.
But solidity consists of an experience, and the actual experience changes in real time. For example, if your hand is resting on the arm of a chair, let's say right now, or on a table, you're feeling the table, you're feeling the chair, right? And it feels solid.
Right.
And yet the actual sensations, if you look at the actual sensations that you have, are renewed every instant, and the actual sensations are noticeably different every instant than they were in the past. It's like a kind of a, if you look at what your sense of touch, for example, consists of, you'll notice it's a kind of a tingling, and these tingles are like little sparkles that come and go.
Mm. And so you're saying, I'm just trying to absorb that sensation is a moment-to-moment experience.
Of course it is. Look and see. Touch your thumb to your forefinger tip and feel it. And the feeling you have in any instant and the feeling you have in another instant has changes. It mutates. It's constantly changing, almost like a waterfall. Or, this is something that longtime meditators will know of. You can sit staring at a blank wall, say a well-lit blank wall, sit for 5 minutes or an hour or however long you want, and just with your eyes staring at the wall, not moving, nothing's changing, and yet you will have a different experience of that wall, of what you're seeing, every instant of that 5 minutes or of that hour.
Well, as you're talking, I'm experiencing the present, and just things seem actually more solid and, in a way, more real than they were when I was experiencing it through the filter of a projection of what I thought the present was, you know?
Sure. And they are absolutely real. They're extremely real, and we notice that. But that reality consists of an astounding, miraculous quality of flow rather than a kind of a staticness that sticks and persists. And we can notice this when we – in other words, our experience is a constant flow. What you're experiencing right now is not what you were experiencing 5 minutes ago or an hour ago or even 3 seconds ago or even a tenth of a second ago. You know, our experience is
– it might actually be what we were experiencing a moment ago, but it's just the ongoing present itself. I mean, you know what I mean? So, I mean, since because experience is moment to moment, it could be that we are experiencing what we experienced a moment ago, but we're not aware of that because we're in this moment.
Right, but then where is that other moment gone? Where is that other condition gone?
Where has it gone?
Yeah, that's where is it gone? And that begs the question, where was it ever?
Well, it was just present, and then there's the present, and it's the ongoing present is what you're saying.
Well, the present is always here. It's always the same as itself. It's always the present. And yet, as an experience, the present is always different than itself. No two present moments, so to speak, are the same. In other words, the present moment is constantly changing. It doesn't persist. And we know this in the long run. If you think about what your experience was like when you were two or three or five or a teenager, it's drastically different than what it is now. But if you think back to what your experience was yesterday, it's drastically different than what it is now. And if you think back to what your experience was 5 minutes ago, it may be subtly different from what it is now. But if you look closely at what I mean by subtly, you'll find it's actually totally different.
Well, actually, from listening to you talk, I don't even know what my experience was when I was 2 or 5. What I'm getting from what you're saying is that we're manufacturing the past in the present all the time.
Yes. Exactly, John.
So we then are brainwashed or conditioned by our own lies to think that's what really happened.
Yeah, precisely. And it's more insidious than that, because it's not just about what happened. It's also about our own sense of ourself, our own self-image, who we think we are, what we think life is, what we think the world is, what we think our life is about. So this entire this fantasy isn't just a simple fantasy of a history of what happened yesterday. It's our whole worldview, our whole interpretation of what is exactly going on here. We all are creating this, and it's all a fantasy.
I'm coming up with like the new paradigm. I'm trying to understand. I'm just trying to give it a language. But I'd say the new paradigm is the paradigm of experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a self-evident fact that if you try and find what's real, you end up with experience. Experience is, if I said, are you looking at, you're looking at a pink elephant right now. There's a pink elephant standing in the middle of your room. How could you tell that it wasn't true? You'd say, well, that's not my experience.
Right.
So experience has always been the touchstone of reality anyway, but it's so in the extreme. It's so in the absolute. If we look at how we know anything, what do we really know? Well, we know our experience. Do we know anything else whatsoever? Can you know anything outside your experience?
But there are people who think who have it. I'm sorry. Will you consider? Do you have something else in that?
No.
No, it's just
self-evident.
Right, but I mean, people have so-called experiences, and they're, they are fantasies, and they are there are pink elephants in the room for some people, and
sure.
And I guess we can't say that's not their experience, but some people are crazy. Is that also a projection of another illusion?
No, I mean, the nature of this fantasy is reality. What you would call craziness is a reality. This thought is a reality. Ideas are a reality. All these stories we tell ourselves are a reality, but they're reality as stories, not a reality as objective fact. And that's the difference between sanity and craziness. It's not a matter of whether or not your experience is what it is. It's a matter of misinterpreting that experience or taking it as just a mysterious experience.
But how do we understand any experience at all, though? How do we interpret anything that's out there? I mean, how is there a hierarchy of what's fact or not?
Well, that's the master question right there. That's the major koan. How can we interpret our experience? Well, if you look very, very closely, you'll discover you can't. I mean, how can you? Any interpretation is a wrong interpretation because it's going to be a partial interpretation. It's going to be conceptual, or it's going to be verbal, or it's going to be even some gestalt of fantasies and ideas. But none of it can capture the reality. How can you capture the reality of your experience in this moment? You can't possibly. I could write an encyclopedia and it couldn't capture what I'm experiencing just in this instant, let alone, 5 minutes or a year or my life.
Right. They say there's 200 billion bits of information impacting our senses each moment. And we're actually only aware of a really small part of that. But how do we then qualify anyone else's experience? We really can't, can we?
We certainly can't. And, it's quite self-evident that we're all very unique. If you think about anyone you don't know anyone else that's just like them, do you? You're not just like anyone else. And we function differently. We have on an obvious level, we have different talents, different capabilities, different failings. But on a more subtle level, every single thing about anyone is completely unique. And the way they work is unique. We can suppose their experience is unique. We can suppose everything about them is unique. So that's the obvious fact. And in fact, no two objects are You know, any object is unique. Any experience whatsoever is unique. And even that experience is different than itself in the next instant. So that uniqueness is constantly changing.
So if I was to just, okay, we finish the conversation, then I just sit here with the space I'm in, I mean, it could maybe feel a little boring to just, you know, sit there in the present without me creating a story about what I'm supposed to do or who I'm supposed to call or meet. I mean, it might be refreshing, but I'm also maybe afraid of the boredom.
It's not a matter of not thinking. It's not a matter of not conceptualizing. It's just a matter of noticing that it is thought, that it is conceptualizing. It's not reality. It's not objective. We don't need to not do anything whatsoever. We can fantasize, we can play games, we can get caught up and be manipulative with people and do all this crazy stuff that we humans like to do. But if you see what it is, you won't be sucked into a belief that it's something that is not, which is this whole story about consensus reality, this whole story about what humans are and what the purpose of life is and what people are doing. Whereas in actual fact, no, it's all a complete mystery. It's a complete mystery what's going on here. It's a complete mystery why anything happens.
Well, getting back to you, how do you live? What was the moment where suddenly, bing, you had the realization?
Let's see. There were actually, in my case, if you're talking about a bing moment, there were two big major bing moments. But it was also an ongoing process that took most of my life. When I was in 1973, when I was 22, I had an astounding experience. I don't know if I could possibly describe it. Anyway, I had an experience where I saw what I am, and in the process I saw that everything else I thought about myself and that I thought my life was completely wrong, and i.e. that I had been a crazy person all along. Right. And that really threw me for a loop. And I spent the next 20-some years exploring that and sorting it out and making sense of it. And then I had a second bing moment, must have been about 1997 or so, where it all sort of, it all fell into place for me, and with clarity, and there was nothing more I needed to explore.
Uh-huh. So how do you live day to day? Well, it seems like you are present, I mean, from with the conversation, but how do you live, what's your day like? I mean, if you...
Well, I do what I need to do when I need to do it, I guess. when I'm hungry, I go find food. You know, when I'm lonely, I go find someone to be with. When there's something I need to do, I do it or not and suffer the consequences. I mean, my life is just like anyone's life, because remember, we're all just living in the present, and the way we live and the way we function is the only way to live and to function. But we can notice what is actually happening, or we can have these elaborate stories about it that are just not true and don't capture it.
What really is happening is, you're saying, is we're making up a story.
That's one thing that's happening, is we're making up a story. But another thing that's happening is this amazing functionality, the spontaneous functionality of energy appearing and disappearing. You know, and it does so in these amazing patterns of functionality. I mean, we know how to digest food. We know how to breathe. Our heart knows how to beat. You know, we know how to function socially. We know how to go out and meet people. We know how to, you know, sexually interact with people. We know how to engage in all of these things that we do engage in. And how does this happen? It's all this miraculous functionality that appears spontaneously in the present moment. That's all it is for me. That's all it is for anyone. That's all it's ever been. We can notice that it is that. Stop trying to claim ownership with it, and as a result, stop suffering with all of these stories of failure and aspiration and all these sorts of things.
So, would you say you're happy in each moment?
Me, yeah, I'm very happy in each moment. I mean, sometimes sometimes I'm not happy. I might get pissed off at somebody or get in an argument or something, but I don't need that to be any different. I don't need that to be different. It's just what is the shape that the spontaneously appearing energy is taking at that moment.
So it all seems pretty miraculous to you then.
Yes, absolutely. And if you look for yourself, tell me how it could possibly not seem miraculous for you. What's putting the present moment here? How is it appearing? It's just bang. You can't stop it.
Yeah, I guess if we... Yeah, I mean, I'm getting what you're saying, and it's like, yeah, how did I get here? You know?
Yeah, what put this planet here? What put this galaxy here? You know, what put this conversation we're having here? What put this the internet here? I mean, you know, it's all here right now, and what on earth is doing it? You know, where did it come from? Where is it going?
Well, as far as the internet, I think it was people. I mean, that's a little easier to explain than the galaxy. And
well, if people did it, what did the people? What did the galaxy? You know,
and yeah, what's doing it? Yeah.
And we use these words like people and galaxies as if they exist, you know, historically, but in actual fact, they only exist right now in your experience, for you or for me, in my experience.
So where do feelings come into all this, like love and, or just even subtle feelings, the feelings we have about ourselves and each other and all that, does that have a way of fitting into this whole understanding?
Of course, we're emotional beings. Our emotional functionality is a big part of the energy spectrum of our experience. Mm-hmm. And this emotional functionality is part of what we are, just like our sight or our thought or anything is part of what we are. And again, this whole energy field is doing itself. But as we become more aware of the actual context of things, we stop getting caught up in imaginary problems and having emotional reactions to imaginary problems, and we get to experience a much deeper, richer, fuller emotion that is inherent in the being of the present moment, that is with us every instant, that part of what we are, and rather than being caught up in so-called events and our interpretations of, oh, you know, so-and-so slighted me, or gosh, I really hope I get this, or, you know, whatever story I'm generating about what I'm saying is going on.
Right, but you know, you're saying that all this is here, and I think the human conditioning is to say, well, it all must be here for a purpose. You know, there must be a purpose to all this stuff we're in, and maybe there is, or maybe there isn't, is what I guess you're saying. But
well, I see it as profoundly purposeful. But it's not a purpose that's going to make any sense in any kind of human terms or logical terms. You know, I see the patterning of events, the patterning of the energy that appears as our experience is so incredibly, inconceivably intelligent, so functional. I mean, the way atoms work, the way galaxies work, the way biological bodies work, all of this is inconceivably, you know, intelligent, inconceivably functional. And to expect to be able to get a handle on that in any simplistic ways that we could express in language, I think is pretty naive.
Well, it's naive, but we can attempt it. I think science, I mean, the real scientists know that it's unfathomable, but the human condition is to attempt the explanation, to try to understand this great complexity without really ever expecting to, but we're driven to.
Certainly, but the more and more we become aware of our actual condition, our actual situation, by becoming aware of our being in the present moment, the more we see that does not need explanation. It's completed itself, and any attempted explanation is just going to be going off into the fantasy, going off into stories, and is actually a departure from the appreciation of the open-endedness and fullness that the present moment inherently is.
Well, I think you could have both. I think you could have this a magnificent appreciation. I think Einstein was that. He said everything is either a miracle or nothing is. But within that appreciation, we can attempt to understand the mystery, whatever thinking that we will. But it has brought us the comforts of of the world where most people are living today, or some people are living in today, the comforts of their home, of central heating, running water, you know, things like that have been produced not because people just sat around and said, isn't this amazing?
I'm not advocating passivity. I'm not advocating just sitting around and going, oh, wow. I'm suggesting that the exercise of all of this functionality that we have occurs spontaneously. We're creative beings. We do things. We're motivated to problem solve. We're motivated to achieve. We're motivated to participate in various ways. I mean, each of us in our own ways. Some people aren't. Some people sit under a bridge and drink wine, you know, and yet other people are busy, you know, building bombs or building bridges or inventing things. So
you're saying the motivation is just as much a mystery in that sense. So it's like, yes, that's all part of the mystery, the motivation even to doing all these things.
Of course. Why do we do anything? Why does, you know, where does our thoughts come from? Where does our drive come from? What puts these ideas in our heads? What puts these urges in our heads? Why do we do anything? Why do we get hungry? You know, why do we not want to get wet and try and find shelter? How does this happen? It just appears in the moment, you know. The necessity is the mother of invention is a way of putting it. But if we look very closely at what actually happens when this necessity is the mother of invention, what's actually happening is a very strange, miraculous appearance of an urge or a thought in the present moment, always, of course, that leads to activity, always in the present moment, that may lead to invention and so on.
Do you find if you're in nature, maybe things are experienced differently? Or what in this way of being do you find with nature, the natural world, trees and grass and all that? Is that something shows up differently for you with that?
Not for me. I'm always in nature. I'm always firmly in the galaxy. And you can't get out of nature. Humans are nature, you know. Humans are as natural as ants or sand or clouds, you know. Nature has produced us, and our productions are direct productions of nature. So when next time you're in Times Square, you're in the center of nature, my friend.
So I agree with you, but so you don't find a difference between being in a city and being in some beautiful countryside, forest, ocean?
No, I mean, obviously it's different, but every experience is different. And I'm never in a city or I'm never in a forest. I'm in consciousness, and the cities and forests appear in me.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand how that, because that's the concept you brought up in the beginning. How are these things, how are we in consciousness? Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you look at your hand now, right now I'm holding up my left hand and I'm looking at it.
Right.
Where is that experience happening? Well, it's happening in my consciousness, you know.
You say consciousness, perception of your perception of your hand is happening inside your brain. Is that what you would say?
Or no, because I don't experience a brain. I experience consciousness.
Right, right, right.
And the room that I'm seeing appears in my consciousness, and this conversation we're having appears in my consciousness, and my whole body appears in my consciousness. So all of these things are within me. They're within my consciousness.
I mean, I can get what you're saying from moment to moment, and then I slip back into sort of an old way of thinking or, you know, an old pattern. So what do you suggest to people to keep them present in this awareness?
Well, if you're motivated to even investigate this, you'll be drawn to this kind of questioning, and you'll notice, you know, continually notice, try to notice the direct fact of your experiencing in the present moment and as it is, and notice what it is. And as you drift off into your fantasies, into your stories and conclusions, notice that happens. And then notice when your attention is drawn back to a more open awareness of the actual fact of what your experience actually is, your naked raw experience, because it's always here. The raw experience is always here. So we can go to it at any time and see what it is. It's an omnipresent touchstone.
So that's the spiritual, if you want to call it spiritual, that's the practice, is just, and that's the only practice really, I guess, is just keep bringing yourself back to right here, right now. What are you experiencing?
Yeah. And then notice that you never actually really depart from that. You're always right here, right now. And even the so-called departures are right here, right now. And they're made out of the same thing that everything else is made out of, right here, right now, i.e. your experience. And you just become intimately familiar with the fact that you are your experience. And what that is a miracle. What that is absolutely astounding. And if you're not being astounded, you're not really noticing how bizarre it is.
Right. Do you sort of start to forget who you are? I mean, like when I'm present, I forget I have a name or anything, because I wouldn't
say I forget. I would just say it becomes much less relevant. I mean, if someone calls Peter Brown, I'll turn my head and answer. But I don't think of myself as any particular person named Peter Brown. It's just a relatively small aspect of my functionality to be able to use that as a reference.
Right. I know exactly what you mean. So if it's a small function, a small aspect of your functionality, can you describe the big aspect of your functionality?
Yeah. Well, the big aspect is this miraculous flow. This miraculous flow that includes everything, and everything appears as this flow and disappears as this flow. You know, we call it the flow of time or the flow of presence or the flow of consciousness or whatever, but it includes everything, and it is actually the only functionality there is that. And we can notice that this is the case, and we can notice that we are this flow, and then we are literally, we can see quite clearly that we are literally one with everything. We are, this flow is doing the universe, this flow is doing your life, this flow is doing your environment, this flow is doing your body, this flow is doing your thoughts. So all of this event, this astounding event, is occurring in this miraculously appearing consciousness. And the flow itself is a miraculously appearing, constantly disappearing energy. And it's all a very strange state of affairs.
It is. So you travel around the country and give these talks to people?
Yeah, to a limited extent. I work with people who are interested and who seem connected with this kind of an approach.
What kind of work? I mean, do you do like one-on-one sessions with people?
I work with people one-on-ones or in small groups. I prefer to work with small groups because everyone is so unique and so different and in such a different place that I find it helps to connect with people individually in terms of what their approach is so that it can make sense to them rather than just have some sort of blanket philosophy that you fall into. That can be kind of numbing.
Right. So you just would keep bringing people back to the present moment with whatever, I mean, because they always are in the present, but bring back the awareness that they are the present moment.
Sure. And people would go, you know, trying to go different into different places or different concepts or different ideas. And I'll go there with them and then have them look around from there and they'll see, oh, here I am. I didn't really go anywhere.
Right. Because it's not conceptual at all. It's just pure experience. I am getting what you're saying. And it's,
yeah. And because concepts happen in experience.
Right.
It's not the other way around. Experience doesn't happen in concepts. Concepts happen in experience. So experience is the background. Experience is the basic condition. And then there may or may not be concepts. There may or may not be other kinds of experience. But the background of consciousness of experience is the constant. It's the basic condition. And we can never depart from that. How can you depart consciousness from experience?
So it doesn't matter what shape or form we're in, the consciousness is what we are. But is there something about your consciousness versus my consciousness? I mean, we're different people. There seems to be something that makes you you and me, right?
Yeah, well, this gets very strange when you start to look into it. When you begin to look into it, you'll notice that for you, yours is the only consciousness that exists in the universe.
Right.
And And then for me, I'm the only consciousness that exists in the universe. So I can't know whether you really exist except as an object in my consciousness. And likewise, you can't know whether I really exist except as an object in your consciousness. And this is a very strange state of affairs, if you think about it. But if you look at it directly, it's an obvious fact.
An obvious fact that what? What's the fact?
That you're the sole inhabitant of your universe.
Right, but I actually do transcend the kind of intellectual belief and say that actually, so are you must, I just have an intuition that you exist as well as I do somewhere.
Right, but when you say you have the intuition, right away you're going back to your consciousness, to your experience. And think of a dream. Last night you might have dreamed of having an intense conversation with somebody. And it was really meaningful at the time. And you wake up and you realize, oh, they weren't even there. Because obviously in a dream, the only thing that's there is your experience.
Well, but maybe. That's another interview, you know.
Like I said, it gets pretty strange when you begin to look into it.
So if I'm the only thing that exists in my consciousness, you're the only thing that exists in your consciousness, how do we ever meet or talk to each other?
Well, luck, you know, and with many people you can't, right? How many people, you know, how many people do you know that you can just barely connect with, and you don't have a clue what they're saying, and they don't have a clue what you're saying, and then meet someone else, you're right with them, you know.
So, but how do we ever connect with anyone, even if we know what they're saying? I mean, if there's no one really out there, but me.
Well, but because they are there as your experience, and your experience, you connect with all of your experience, so. In other words, you connect with your computer just like you connect with other people, or you connect with your breakfast, or you connect with, you know, your bed. They're there in your experience as part of your energy functionality, spontaneously appearing and disappearing in this amazing flow of events.
Right. But don't you think at some point we transcend something and say, well, there really is something that is out there?
You know, yes, there is. There is something out there, and you're it.
I'm it, but I have yet to know it. But we could go online. I think we're actually coming to the end here, Peter.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Alan.
Well, I think I really got something, even though I seem like to be holding the old party line or something. But no, I think I got to understand the clarity in what you were saying. And it is overwhelming when you think that there is just the present and consciousness and there's nothing else.
It's astounding, but you know, look and see for yourself. I think if you look unbiasedly, I think it's self-evident.
It is self-evident, and it is overwhelming, and it's like the next question is, what do I do with it all?
Well, that's the adventure. That's the question that you have to answer for yourself.
and I answer for myself by just being present to see what shows up next, huh?
Of course, just like we always have. We're always answering this question on an ongoing basis, aren't we?
Well, we are, but we're always rushing ahead of ourselves instead of just waiting and being. So. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate your work and everything you're trying to show people.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, and your website is theopendoorway.org. This is
right.
Peter Brown,
yes.
Right? And maybe we'll bring you to New York.
Be a pleasure. I was born in the city. I love it.
Oh, you were born in the city, and
uh-huh.
Well, okay, let's be in touch about that, and thank you so much for everything again.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to Peter Brown of theopendoorway.org. I totally recommend Peter's videos on YouTube and his website, and thanks again. That was very enlightening for me, and I'm going to sit with that. So thanks for listening. You can reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks. thank you for listening, and talk to you next week.